From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Wow, thank you, everybody. Really appreciate it. Yeah, well, I'm pretty excited, too. We got a fun show for you today. Comedian Dimitri Martin will be joining us later to play Not My Job. But first, you all know we got some surprising news this week. But at the same time, we had been waiting for that news for about a decade. As it turns out, we had actually written some jokes in anticipation of this occasion back in 2001, and we were hoping they still might work. So as we start out the show, let me just try some out and you see how it goes. Here's one. Wow, the U.S. military is better at finding their man than Ally McBeal. All right. I got another one. The news was so good, I rewound my VHS cassette and watched it again. Yeah, well, maybe we'll try to come up with some fresh ones. Give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you are on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, Peter. This is Christy Stone calling from Nashville.
Hey, how are things in Nashville?
Good. Looking forward to you guys coming in.
Yeah, we're coming in a month or so. We've never been. I've never been to Nashville. What should I do when I go there?
Let's see. Well, there's all the country music stuff, I guess, if you're into that.
When you're looking at Peter, you're looking at country.
That's true.
That's right.
Well, welcome to the show, Christy. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a comedian and a host at Vocalo.org, Mr. Brian Babylon of Chicago.
Hey, how are you? Hey.
Next, say hello to the woman behind the advice column, Ask Amy, Ms. Amy Dickinson.
Amy, hi.
And a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning, Mr. Mo Rocca is here.
Hi there. Love Nashville.
Now, you, Christy, are going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. Your job, of course, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that, you'll win Carl's voice on your voicemail, anything else you want to put it on. Ready to go?
Ready.
Here you go. Now, your first quote is the above-the-fold headline from the New York Times on Monday morning.
Another side of tilapia, the perfect factory fish.
That's right.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was the headline that they had ready to go before they stopped the presses late Sunday night. It was ultimately replaced by a headline announcing what?
The death of Osama bin Laden.
Exactly right. Very good. Let's give that a round of applause. So this week, we found out that bin Laden has spent the last 6 years living in a compound in an upscale Pakistani town called Abbottabad. Neighbors said the residents of the house there were nice enough, although every Halloween, the guy who lived there always dressed as Osama bin Laden. except for last year when he was a Chilean miner like everybody else. Anyway, so President Obama, as we know, announced that Navy SEALs had gone in and killed him. And he made this speech on Sunday night, and he said, quote, America can do whatever we set our mind to, unquote. And that's true. We can solve any problem as long as the solution involves Navy SEALs. If you don't have health insurance, the SEALs will rappel down from helicopters and shoot your cold in the head.
But you know what? No one's really talking about, you know, that Osama bin Laden's wife was there and she got shot in the leg. Now, that's the interview that I want to hear. Like, you know, like, girl, what happened? You know, like, girl, what happened in there? Tell me, like...
Yeah,
I want that to be Oprah's last interview.
Right. But, like, I'm, like, so into the SEALs now.
Everybody is.
Oh, it's not just me.
Yeah, apparently.
It's not just women of a certain age.
I don't think the SEALs...
All the women in America are really into Navy SEALs, and all the guys in America are going, yeah, I'm a Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
I don't
Turns
think
out there's 40 million of them.
Call, who knew? Call me a cougar, I'll call you a SEAL.
And the SEALs are like, and all the SEALs in the bars are like, yeah, I know I'm 50 and overweight. I'm undercover.
Yeah.
Once we get home, this all comes off. I'll show you.
Yeah.
All right, we're not leaving the story yet. Here's your next quote. It's about the aftermath.
We don't need to spike the football.
That was President Obama explaining why he was not going to release what?
The photos.
Yes, the photos of bin Laden's body, of course. That's right. You got that right. The frustrating thing about finally killing Osama bin Laden is that you can only do it once. So the media moved on to obsessing over whether or not the White House should release postmortem photos. As you heard, the president decided that we Americans, quote, don't need to spike the football, which made everybody ask once again, was this guy born here? Of course we spike the football. We invented spiking the football. A real American president?
Because of an end zone dance.
Yeah, exactly. No, he would release the photo by sponsoring a NASCAR driver and painting it on the car. The media lost its mind this week. I mean, on Sunday night, they were waiting for the announcement, and Wolf Blitzer had to vamp for like 90 minutes as they delayed the announcement. And he knew the news, but he couldn't say it. It wasn't sourced correctly. So he was like, ooh, it's so exciting, I can't tell you. I'll give you a hint. It's in Leyden Bay is Ed Day. But then, you know.
Rhymes with Obama.
Once the news was finally confirmed, CNN's John King just kept looking into the camera and saying, Osama bin Laden is dead. Osama bin Laden is dead. Unfortunately, he said it so many times, he activated an ancient curse and brought bin Laden back to life.
I hate it when that happens.
My favorite media coverage was TMZ's.
Really?
TMZ afterwards. It was just a question they put out, and I thought it was great. They said, how many people think that after Obama went back to the private residence that night that he and Michelle had sex? I mean, if your husband goes and kills the most evil man on the planet, that's a huge turn-on. I mean, right?
Yeah.
I just love, like, you made the world safe, now make my bed dangerous.
Yeah. But anyway, the hardest problem for the media, the hardest problem for the media this week, of course, was keeping the names straight. Here, for example, is an anchor on the Canadian network Global TV.
It started when Obama took office. He directed the head of the CIA to make killing Obama their number one priority. Back in August, they got a possible lead on where Obama might be hiding. He was located, possibly, they believed that...
So everybody made this mistake. Fox News made it. MSNBC made it too, the BBC. So President Obama, now that this is all taken care of, has ordered that our next public enemy, number one, has a name that is absolutely nothing like his. So the FBI has said the new worst threat to our freedom is a Kabul propane dealer named Mitt Bin Romney. All right, something else did happen this week. Here is your last quote.
It's like a beauty contest where all the women are ugly.
That was South Carolina Republican operative Bob McAllister, and he was describing a big event hosted by the South Carolina GOP and Fox News on Thursday. What?
Oh, is it a potential Republican presidential debate?
Yes, that's exactly what it was. It was, believe it or not, May 2011, and that was the very first official Republican debate of the 2012 election cycle, held on Thursday. It featured Ron Paul, Tim Pawlenty, Herman Cain, Rick Santorum, and Gary Johnson, known by his nickname, Who the Hell is Gary Johnson?
Yeah, you know, Peter, anytime you have a former CEO of Godfather's Pizza,
that's Herman Cain.
You know. Herman Cain is horrible.
What, they couldn't get the guy from Domino's?
I mean, couldn't get Papa John? Come on, give me a break.
By the way, I want to say this about Gary Johnson, who none of you know who he is. Gary Johnson is the former two-term governor of New Mexico, and he is the only actual declared candidate in the race. Everybody else just has exploratory committees. So if nobody else declares and Obama just decides to suddenly quit, you know, become a Navy SEAL, I don't know, we could end up with president Who the Hell is Gary Johnson. Carl, how did Christy do in our quiz?
Well, you can't do better, Peter. Christy, you had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Woo-hoo. Well done. Thank you, Christy.
So, Christy, you win the GOP nomination.
Exactly. Why not? Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Mo, Muammar Gaddafi, as you know, is not a popular figure in the U.S. right now, but he's making an effort to win over Western hearts and minds. He's campaigning for a special exhibition in the U.S. to show off his softer side. Specifically what?
I believe it's his fashion.
Yes, it is. Yes. Muammar Gaddafi's fashion sense. Mr. Gaddafi? He's lobbying the Metropolitan Museum of Art to stage a retrospective of Gaddafi's, quote, 4 decades of superior dress sense. This sounds crazy, I know, but that's because he is. One of his aides sent a note to the museum and the New York Times expressing concern that Gaddafi's, quote, 3,400 items of breathtaking sartorial magnificence might be destroyed in the current fighting in Libya.
Hold on. Breathtaking.
Breathtaking.
Wait. Okay. Come on. The man can work an epaulette.
He can. He's kind of over the top. He is the only world leader to face a dressing down from the UN Security Council and the judges on Project Runway. Mm.
I love his hip-hop stuff. You know, Fatwa Farm.
That was him.
Oh, wait. And doesn't
and
he
I love
wear,
the,
like...
My favorite movie is The Devil Wears Intifada.
Thank you, everybody. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hello, who's this?
Camellia Colbert from Lake City, Florida.
Well, how are you, Camellia?
Hey, I'm super.
You
love
sound
that
it.
Name.
I know.
You sound very, oh, it's a lovely name.
It's the state flower of Alabama.
The camellia?
Yes.
You are the happiest person I've talked to for all. What do you do there in Lake City?
I'm in sales.
Oh, wow.
I am I'll buying.
Buy it. Well, that's great. I mean, I'd buy anything. What do you sell? I'll buy it.
Uh-oh. I work for a tobacco company.
Oh, my God.
Well, tobacco is a flower, isn't it?
Well, that explains a lot, actually. Camellia, welcome to the show. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Camellia's topic?
Grandpa knows best.
In today's modern world, it seems there's a technological fix for everything. When your iPod dies, you get a new one at the Apple store. When you get lost, you turn on your GPS. But sometimes nothing works as well as good old-fashioned know-how. When you run out of glue, why, go get a horse and boil it. Our panelists are going to tell you about 3 old-fashioned solutions to modern problems, but only one of them is being used right now. Ready to play?
Yes.
First, let's hear from Brian Babylon.
It's an age-old problem on college campuses. How do you make that 9 a.m. class when your head is pounding from slamming all those Jell-O shots the night before? At the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, they found an age-old solution, leeches. First used by the hard-partying boys at Delta Epsilon, the blood-sucking parasites now seen hanging from the faces of students all over campus. Pre-med student Beatrice Johnson told the student paper, the leeches secrete a chemical that's a lot like aspirin. Plus, they suck just enough blood to relieve some of the pressure. Those medieval doctors knew what they were doing, and they knew how to party. Far from being disgusting, now the leeches are start being seen as a status symbol around campuses. A very hot party is often praised as being a 3-leecher.
Leeches being used to relieve hangovers at the University of North Carolina. Your next story of someone using the wisdom of the aged comes from Amy Dickinson.
Everyone agrees that the students at Shaw High School in upstate New York have awesome school spirit. But that spirit started to fade after the 2009 football season when the team lost all but one game. So, what to do? Start an awesome flag squad. And it turns out that flags were just what the football team needed. Game after game, the Purple Lions showed an almost magical ability to outsmart their opponents. Local sports writer David Hill videotaped the flag squad's routine and unlocked the secret to the team's winning season. Semaphore, the ancient art of communication used between ships at sea. While fans in the stand thrilled to the sight of the girls dancing to Lady Gaga, it turns out the flag squad was telegraphing the opposing team's plays right back to their home team. The cheating scheme was the brainchild of Clara Gallagher, a junior whose father had been in the Navy. We're trying to figure out how to help the team the most because, well, they're, like, really bad. And I thought, hey, why not flag signals? I mean, it worked at the Battle of Trafalgar, she told the paper. As a result, the team's winning season has been nullified, and the flag squad has been demoted to play in the pep band.
Semaphore being used to help a football team win in upstate New York. Your last story of something old fixing something new comes from Morocco.
Remember when young fellas wore their pants around the waist? Those were the days. Today's no-good-neck whipper-snapping hoodlums barely keep their pants on, the waistline hanging somewhere below the butt. Saggy pants have become a national nuisance, which is why some states have even tried to ban them. But now come suspenders. The innovative urban fashion accessory designed for people who wear their pants just north of the knees. Black with shiny metal suspenders extend from a person's actual waist and attach to the pants, however far down they may hang. Of course, actual suspenders do the trick if they're long enough. Rumor has it that behind that desk all those years, Larry King was exploding downstairs.
All right. Here are your choices. Was it from Brian Babylon that leeches are being used to help cure hangovers in college campuses? From Amy Dickinson that semaphore was used to help a football team win? Or from Morocco that suspenders, now known as subspenders, are helping urban youth keep their pants from falling completely off? Which of these is the real story of old technology helping with a new problem?
I'm torn between Amy and Mo.
Tricky.
And I think I'm going to go with Amy.
You're going to go? You're going to choose Amy?
I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go with the flag team.
You're going to go with the flag team. All right. Well, we actually spoke to the person who came up with this idea.
It's a simple horizontal belt that attaches around the user's waist. And from that belt fall four vertical suspender straps.
That was Andrew Lewis. He is the inventor of suspenders.
But that's like a garter.
Sadly, as you have no doubt figured out, Morocco had the real story about the suspenders. You didn't win our prize, but you did earn a point for Amy for her brilliant idea of semaphoring cheerleaders. So thank you, Camellia, so much for playing our game.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, bye-bye. Camellia.
Bye-bye.
And now the game where we invite interesting people on to discuss things they're just not interested in. You know how a lot of aspiring comedians quit the business and just go to law school? Dimitri Martin quit law school right before he graduated to become a comedian. Turned out to be a good idea. He got his own series on Comedy Central, and he has now written his first book. Dimitri Martin, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Your material, it's kind of hard to describe, but it's kind of like the musings of an obsessive mind. You think about things rather deeply and oddly, which is kind of what's so great.
Yeah, I think I spend a lot of time on planes and in cars and just places waiting alone to get to the next place. So I usually just take out a pen and draw things over and over again or make lists, you know, things like that. Nothing crazy, not like list of killing people or anything, just more like...
Yeah, that's not the sort of thing you do. Could you describe your comedy for someone who hasn't been fortunate enough to see it yet?
Yeah, it's just made up of little ideas, and then I put them together in different ways. So each little idea is like a little brick, and then I just build them up into different shapes, and those are like the bits.
Right.
And and then the silence that you hear, that's usually what happens.
Yeah. So, when you hear about somebody who was in law school and then quit to be a comic, we imagine that you were a total cut-up in class and everybody was saying to you, hey, you should go be a professional comedian. Is that what happened?
Yes and no. I think I was pretty normal all the way up. And then by the time I got to law school, I had made a mistake. And then I became the funny guy at law school, which was really the annoying guy. Actually, not the annoying guy. One of the annoying people at law school.
Yeah.
A lot of them. And then eventually I realized I'm wasting time and money here. I should drop out and go try to find a stage somewhere.
And what was the moment you were actually, like, through 2 years of law school where you were like, I don't want to do this? Was there a particular moment?
I went for the first year, and it was just a couple months in that I realized, oh, no, this it? This is what this is? No. But I didn't know what, you know, I really didn't have any other plans or anything. So I stuck around, and I was a White House intern after the first year.
Wait a minute. You were a White House intern? Which White House?
In the Clinton White House.
You were an intern at the Clinton White House?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That, now it's good.
Are you okay?
How was that experience?
That was, I missed a lot of the action. I was there
for that. Really? Did you meet the president?
I met the president, yes.
Did you tell him a joke?
You know what happened was, we took a big photo with the president behind the White House.
Yeah.
And at the end of the photo, somebody made an announcement, hey, the president is going to be kind enough to stick around, so as you leave, you can all shake his hand.
Yeah.
I said, great. So I'm waiting in line with the other interns. I had, like, my short sleeve shirt and a tie. And I heard people ahead of me saying things like, Mr. President, you know my father from so-and-so. My dad is whatever. My mom, you know, people, when they narrow it down to a very short interaction, I think all the BS is kind of stripped away, and it's just like, hey, here's my connection to you.
Yeah.
But I didn't have one of those. So I'm thinking, what am I going to say to this guy? So I'm not proud of this, but what I said was, what's up, Mr. President? That's what you had.
And
President Clinton.
So you have this distinct style. I mean, most comics are telling jokes about current events or politics or, like, plane travel, and you get up and, like, start drawing Venn diagrams on stage. Do people respond to that?
No. Definitely.
No.
And for a while still. I mean, I think I have a specific audience that I find in different pockets of the country. And, you know, I mix it up. I do some of the drawings, and mostly what I do is I just tell jokes about simple things like dogs and chairs, you know, and things like that.
Can you tell us a chair joke?
Let me think. Yes, this is a chair joke I remember. A beanbag chair is very helpful because it tells you things. Like, if you're over 40 and sitting in one, then you failed. That's both a chair joke and a beanbag.
That's true. I want to ask you about palindromes. One of the cool things in the book is a short chapter of palindromes. Nobody makes up palindromes. You do. In fact, you make up what must be the longest palindrome I've ever seen. It goes on for 3 pages.
Wow. 500 words.
Oh, wow.
How in the world do you do that?
I don't know. For me, when I was in high school, I used to work at my parents' diner. I'm Greek, and so my family has to have a diner.
Yes.
If you're Greek in New Jersey, you either have a diner or you're related to somebody who has one. So that's a true stereotype. And sometimes I'd be sitting there, and I'd have to be the host, where people come in and you say, hi, how many? Two? Okay. And then you seat them, and then you go back and sit by the counter. So I bring little puzzle books and things like that to entertain myself. And I discovered a palindromic poem once in a puzzle book. And they said, hey, this is one of the longest in the English language. And I counted, it was 58 words. And I thought, like anybody would, oh, man, I got to do that.
Even to an NPR crowd, I think, not anybody would do that. But go on.
I can tell you that in my experience, palindromes are the number one, like, conversation stopper, like, party killer of anything.
Really? So you're talking to some woman at a party and go, hey, I'm going to say a sentence that reads the same if you read it backwards.
You say,
yeah, or if somebody says something and then I take their name and add a couple letters to it, I'm like, I'll say it, and then I'll say, by the way, that's a palindrome. Then it's just blank stare. It's just total silence.
But you know what the thing about your palindromes really make me want to hear more chair jokes.
No, listen. I want to stand up for this man's palindromes, because he has a bunch of palindromes that you've never heard before, and then he has a 500-word palindrome, and you're like, come on, this is not a palindrome. And you sit there, and you start reading it backwards, and it's a palindrome.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Peter, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, Dimitri Martin, we are delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Take My Wife, Please.
That was the signature line of comedian Henny Youngman. And since you're something of a non-traditional comedian, we thought we'd ask you about the most famous straight-ahead jokester of all time. Answer 2 questions correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Dimitri playing for?
Dimitri is playing for Justin Mabardi of New York City.
All right, here is your first question. Youngman was famous for a number of qualities, among them, which of these? A, he had the worst breath of any major comic. Fans knew never to sit in the front rows. B, he was the fastest working comic of his time. He delivered 50 or more jokes in an 8-minute set. Or C, he never, ever was seen to laugh ever at anything.
Okay, I like all those options. I think the first one would be the meanest and most interesting historical legacy for a comic to leave. But I think it's going to be the second one, B, that he was the fastest.
He was. He was an extremely fast comic. He'd get in, tell an awful lot of jokes, get off. That's good.
All right.
So he was tireless in looking for paying work. Another famous for that. He was always out there looking to make a buck. As he proved it once when he did what? A, he spent the hour between his two shows at Carnegie Hall telling jokes on the street with a hat in front of him. B, he got off on the wrong floor of a hotel on the way to a gig. He found a bar mitzvah going on and booked a quick extra gig for $150 at the bar mitzvah. Or C, he would tell a joke in an elevator, and if he got a laugh, he'd ask everybody on board for $2.
Ooh. You know, B sounds like those would be terrible parents if they didn't have entertainment for
right.
the bar mitzvah.
Right.
So I'm not going to do that one. Could be right, but I'm not going to do that one. And then A, that's pretty appealing. Nice New York story. But I think I'm going to go with C, because I could see that being kind of coercive in a very interesting way.
He'd lean in the door close button and say, okay, you've had a laugh, now pay up. That's your choice?
Yeah.
No, it was actually the bar mitzvah.
No.
It was a famous story he bragged about. He was on his way to the ballroom at the Waldorf Astoria, thousands of people waiting for him. Got off on the wrong floor. There's a bar mitzvah. He arranged a second gig. He came down, did it later, made an extra $150. He was very proud.
Wow.
All right.
So maybe they already had entertainment, so it was like a bonus.
Exactly. A little extra thing. All right. Now, this is your last question. If you get this right, you win.
So if I get this right, Justin gets the prize.
Exactly right. So the pressure's on. His most famous trademark joke was, of course, take my wife, please. But there's something surprising. I know, there's something surprising about that joke. What was it? A, despite that joke and many others like it, he was never married. B, the first time he told it wasn't a joke. He really wanted someone to take his wife. Or C, he tried it out first as, please, take my wife, before realizing that reversing it would get the laugh.
Mm. Ooh. I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A.
Never married.
He was never married. You're saying he spent a lifetime telling jokes about his wife.
Maybe.
But he was never married.
Oh.
Well, I'm not sure yet. I'm not finished.
All right.
Yeah.
I thought you said he was never harried, like he was never bothered.
Yeah, he never bothered.
Yeah. The phone connection's weird. Married, you're telling me. Okay.
Never married, yeah. Now that you know that, you're going to reconsider. All right. So the other two choices okay. were the first time he said it wasn't a joke, he really wanted someone to take his wife.
Okay, I'm going to say B.
You're going to go
say B?
That he really meant it seriously? You're right. Yeah. It's a true story. The way he told the story was.
Thank you.
He was backstage and getting ready for a show, and he wanted an usher to take his wife to her seat out in the audience. And he said, take my wife, please, and got a laugh. He's like, wait a minute. Thus a trademark was born. Carl, how did Dimitri Martin do in our quiz?
Dimitri had 2 correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win for Justin Mabardi.
Well done. Congratulations.
All right.
Woo! Dimitri Martin, thank you so much. His new book is called This Is a Book. By Dimitri
thank
Martin.
You.
Dimitri, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Peter.
Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care.
Bye.
Thank you so much. In just a minute, Carl leads a raid on the home of the world's number one wanted rhyme in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Brian, while the beeping of an alarm clock is enough to startle most people from a peaceful slumber, there are those that can sleep through anything, which is why engineers have developed a new kind of alarm clock, the skull, that wakes people up by doing what?
Like an implant or something?
No, it's an alarm clock.
It's an alarm clock.
Special alarm clock.
Special alarm clock that... God, give me a Peter Sagal hint.
It'll shatter your sleep and your eardrums.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say it is attached to a... Beep, sports...
Air horn?
Well, the answer is really that it's so loud it simulates a sonic boom in your bedroom.
Oh, my God.
It's that loud. So, you have trouble waking up, and do you want that to be the least of your problems?
Do they sell a defibrillator next to
they
that?
Do.
That's the question. Designed
by an engineer who does not understand people are most likely to buy products they want. The skull starts your day with a 113 decibel alarm. If that doesn't rouse you, it clamps on and violently shakes your bed till you're awake. Then a robotic arm begins poking you in the face. Still sleeping? The clock squirts you with gravy before releasing a pack of ravenous wolves into your bedroom.
That's probably in Sky Mall.
It's true. Oh, yeah.
You can find that in the Sky Mall. Yeah. Like, oh, wow.
I hate it.
I gotta get that. I don't know, why is it that when you're up there, is it you're lightheaded?
Yeah.
You want to buy that crap.
That's funny.
Yeah, I need more doorstops.
Mo, this week the Wall Street Journal reports on an industry that is seeing most of its clientele age and is launching a full-board recruiting effort to find younger people. What's this industry? And it's not NPR.
It's seeing most of its employee base?
No, it's clientele.
Its clientele is aging, and so it's looking to... Oh, gosh, is it like hansom cabs or like buggies? And... is it stagecoaches? No, please.
Well, it's part of the hospitality industry. It's very informal. There's no jacket required.
Okay, no bed and breakfast. Oh, is it like a nudist camp?
It is nudist camps. Yeah.
Yuck.
The nudist resort industry is in trouble. Most activities at popular nudist hotspots like Sunsport Gardens in Florida, well, now they're geared toward old people. They have activities like a nude shuffleboard. Count the wrinkles. Pin the tail on Jerry. Oh my God, that's not his tail.
Connect the sunspots.
Yeah.
But they're running out of people. They're running out of people, and you would think nudists would be one group in which it would not be hard to find members. But nudists. are hoping to change that with youth-oriented festivals like, no kidding, Nudapalooza. Events like reverse strip poker night and terrible ideas like volleyball tournaments. We wish them the best of luck, but the fact that lifestyle appeals to older people makes sense. If you have seen nudists, you know what a gift failing eyesight can be.
It seems like such a cruel joke that nudist camps and these things always...
Isn't it weird that they're always, like, outside?
Isn't that the point?
Well, I feel like they're vulnerable.
No. Vulnerable to what?
Oh, like thorns. Cacti. Vegetation. I mean, like, there's probably nudist camps in Arizona and the cacti. Ow!
When you have pants on, do you sit on cactuses?
I'm not doing that.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call to leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming shows in Charleston, South Carolina, May 26th and Nashville, June 30th. Tickets are still available for both. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Aaron Glover calling from sunny Atlanta, Georgia.
Hey, how beautiful Atlanta. How are things there?
Oh, it's pretty nice. We just had finals at Georgia Tech, so very peaceful.
Oh, really? Are you there? Are you a student there?
I am. I'm studying for my MBA.
Oh, really? So you're going to go into business. What are you going to do with that degree? What do you want to do?
Not crash the economy.
All right, that would be good.
Appreciate
you might be the first with that ambition, as far as I know. Aaron, welcome to the show. Carl, of course, is going to now perform for you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. Fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, and you will be a winner. Ready to go?
Sure am.
Here's your first limerick.
At hirsute Hindi soldiers, they thrust cash. Hairy lips show we're manly, not just brash. To show that we're brave, we're paid not to shave. Extra cash for a big curly
mustache.
Right. A police chief in India believes police with mustaches get more respect. In law enforcement, that's known as the Magnum PI theory. So he's paying his cops to grow stashes. While the public reaction to the mustachioed force has been positive, they're reporting a 10,000% increase in incidents of police officers being mistaken for strippers dressed as police officers.
It has to be a particular kind of mustache. It can't be like a handlebar mustache.
Yeah, it can't be a hipster curly cue.
Right,
yeah.
Or like
a manly mustache.
Yeah, like, not like a Snidely Whiplash or
like a.
I like Snidely Whiplash, but that's then you think he's a bad guy, not a good.
Be a good guy mustache. All right. Here is your next limerick.
My companion is whom you have met. Don't demean him or he'll start to fret. He is small, soft, and furry, but he'll start to worry if you merely call him my
pet.
Yes, pet. Just because your pets have no idea what you're saying doesn't mean you should continue to offensively refer to them as pets. Animal rights advocates now say pets are from now on to be called animal companions, and you are their, quote, human carers. Get it right. But why stop there? If we're going to be really sensitive about this, we should start referring to dog walks as conjoined strolls. Peter, leashes as obedience scarves.
I want my country back.
I know.
I want my country back. Clearly, man. What's going on here?
But animal companion is very 1950s. Shouldn't it be animal partner?
Yep. Yep.
All right, here is your last limit.
We monkeys are forced to conclude that the way you mix flavors is crude. It's got bland mouth appeal, and the plating's surreal. We're refined when we talk about
food.
Yes, food. When you think of a hairy ape savoring its food, you think of Mario Batali, not actual apes. But a team of Scottish biologists has found that bonobos, that's related to the chimpanzee, they have a set of sounds devoted solely to reviewing food. Low-pitch yelps means, oh, mundane, why bring this unimaginative morsel to my mouth? It's a waste of opposable thumbs. A high-pitch bark, though, well, that's a 4-star review on Ape Yelp.
I was trying to think of some sort of simian that rhymes with zagat or something like that.
So bonobos are the ones with the big schnauzers, right?
Actually, bonobos.
Yeah, how about this? This sauce is a little too orangutangy.
There you go. Carl, how did Aaron do in our quiz?
Aaron, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail. Congratulations.
Well done. Yes. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Amy Dickinson has the lead, Peter. She has 3 points. Brian Babylon and Mo Rocca, they're tied for second. Each one has 2 points.
All right. Well, we have flipped a coin, and Brian has elected to go second, so that means, Mo, you're up first. Please fill in the blank. Former President Bush declined President Obama's invitation to join him as he lay a wreath at blank.
The 9/11 World Trade Center site.
Yes, Ground Zero. Last week, the number of people applying for blank benefits surged to the highest levels in 8 months.
Unemployment.
Right. Saying it is, quote, the most appalling spying machine ever invented, Julian Assange railed against the social networking site blank.
Facebook.
Right. Because of a blown circuit in the fuse box, the launch of the next-to-last blank flight was delayed again.
Space shuttle.
Right. A Florida man attempting to shoplift a case of beer was foiled by blank.
His saggy pants.
Indeed. They fell. It's on video. Isabella and Jacob, two of the character names from the blank series, were 2010's most popular baby names.
They're part of a series.
They are.
Of books.
Yes.
The Harry Potter books?
No, the Twilight books.
Oh, sorry.
In response to a 911 call, police in Salem, Massachusetts arrived at the house and discovered the call came from blank.
A bonobo.
No. It was hungry. The house. It came from the house. Okay. It was an eerie scene when police slowly realized the call had come from inside the house. But how could an inanimate object with no fingers dial the phone? Apparently a burst pipe caused the phone system to short circuit, which triggered the 911 call, and the police then saved the house from destruction. However, that doesn't explain how the house then called Domino's and ordered large pizzas for the office. Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Mo has taken the lead.
Well done. All right. Brian, you're up next. Fill in the blank. In a change of position on Monday, Turkey urged Gaddafi to cede power and leave blank.
Leave the country.
Yeah, well, which country?
Libya.
Thank you. For the first time since the earthquake, workers entered the number one reactor at the nuclear plant in blank.
Japan.
Good enough, yes. And tribal leaders and Native American groups were offended that the code name used in the Osama bin Laden mission was blank.
Operation Geronimo.
Exactly. CBS announced that Scott Pelley would be replacing blank as the anchor of the CBS Evening News.
True.
Would be replacing
Katie
blank.
Couric.
Right. Police arrested a South Carolina man who called 911 to complain that blank.
That he was too drunk to drive.
To complain that his crack cocaine dealer had given him incorrect change. Claude Shule, the world's last surviving combat veteran of blank, died at age 110.
WW1.
Exactly right. World War One. As part of her Let's Move initiative, Michelle Obama visited a D.C. school and blanked with hundreds of middle school kids.
Danced.
Right. A Canadian man's online dating experience went bad when his blind date turned out to be blank.
I'm not going to say bonobo.
No.
His blind date was blind.
No, his blind date turned out to be his own girlfriend.
Terrible.
If you're a fan of the Pina Colada song in which the man and his girlfriend reconnect to the personal ad, you'd expect this scenario to end with a few rueful chuckles.
Yep.
This was not the scenario for the man in question. His girlfriend did not like Pina Coladas. She did like throwing her caramel mochaccino in his face.
She also went on a blind date.
We spent like an inordinate amount of time trying to work this out. And the only thing we could think of is like she must have like answered the personal ad to trap him. That's the only thing we can think of.
Right.
I didn't realize that that's what that song was about.
If you like,
have you never listened to that song?
You know, and the thing you is, like walks in the rain.
Yeah.
Well, he said I was tired of my lady or something like that.
I
they had
was
ladies.
Tired of my lady.
No, they were tired of my lady.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That is that he posted the ad. Do you like Pina Colada? You like Walks in the Rain? And then he meets them. You know, yes, I like Pina. And they meet her and is like, I didn't know you liked
her. I thought he was just asking us these questions.
Oh, Mo, it's always about you.
No, I thought it was like collectively, like, you know.
Do you like Pina Colada?
And I was like, yes.
Walks in the Rain.
No.
Carl.
It's a pollster song.
It really is. Carl, how did Brian do in our quiz?
Brian had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. Brian now has 14 points, and he's taken the lead.
All right. Yeah. So, how many, then, does Amy need to win?
6 correct answers.
Here we go, Amy. This is for the game, fill in the blank. On Thursday, Army Head General Kayani said he would not tolerate a repeat of Sunday's covert operation in blank.
Pakistan.
Right. President Obama and Seth Meyers both roasted Donald Trump at this year's blank last Saturday.
Washington Correspondents' Dinner.
Right, White House Correspondents' Dinner. Yes, Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown has asked to be sent to blank for his National Guard duty this year.
Afghanistan.
Right, government engineers blew up a third section of levee to relieve the threat of flooding from the blank river.
Mississippi.
Right. Thanks to a study in the journal Current Zoology, we discovered this week that red-footed tortoises are not susceptible to blank.
Athlete's foot.
Contagious yawning. The Book of Mormon. The Book of Mormon, a musical from the creators of TV's South Park, received 14 blank nominations this
year. Tony nominations.
Yes. 22-year-old Chicago Bulls player Derrick Rose became the youngest blank in NBA history on Tuesday.
MVP, go Bulls!
After a failed attempt to detain him, Buffalo police are on the lookout for a man who is blank.
A failed attempt to detain him... He is very, he has greased himself, so he's very hard to catch.
No, he is, they're on the lookout for a man who is handcuffed to a small chair. The man was taken in for questioning, and they handcuffed him to a chair, but they didn't handcuff the chair to anything, and he
just walked out.
Police say they would like to have the chair back now, along with the suspect,
funny.
If possible. They also emphasized that it was a small chair, so stop bringing in men handcuffed to Barker Lounger. It's not him.
It's probably on wheels.
Carl, did Amy do well enough to win?
She needed six correct answers, Peter. She had six correct answers.
Well
so
done.
With 15 points, Amy Dickinson is this week's champion.
Bravo. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict the next big surprise announcement President Obama is going to make. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes pre-finished and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo, cork, and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. Lindemood Bell Learning Centers for 25 years, helping individuals learn to read and comprehend. 800-300-1818. The National Association of Realtors, providing resources for home ownership at houselogic.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug couldn't make it to Chicago, Berman executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. And today, we say goodbye to our intern, Nick Park, who is our only intern ever to appear simultaneously on a primetime crime drama. Thanks for everything, Nick. And we know you were really the guy who killed him. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will President Obama's next big interruption of our lives be? Brian Babylon.
All right, I'm going to do this as Obama, okay? You guys ready?
Yeah.
Effectively, immediately, I will issue a two-pay tax on anyone who plans on running for president in 2012.
There you go. Amy Dickinson.
In related news, Navy SEAL 6s have scaled the walls of Trump Tower, have apprehended Donald Trump's hairpiece, but not to worry, they've given it a dignified burial at sea.
And Mo Rocca.
He'll interrupt this Sunday night's programming just to say, hey, that was pretty awesome what I did last Sunday night.
And if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Brian Babylon, Amy Dickinson, and Mo Rocca. Thanks to all of you fabulous people for listening. I am Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR.